Dear friends, today is the third day in our retreat and the time is for the Dhamma talk. May everyone give the consent with three times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Bhūta midanti bhikkave atā bhūtaṁ sammapanyāya pasato yā vichikicca sa pahiyanti ti evaṁ bhante ti ti. Dear Dhamma friends, for the last 2 days we tried to understand the background and the root cause, basic reason for this particular discourse to come into being, and that was basically one of the wrong view that Bhikkhusati entertained. Ultimately it came to the Buddha, and Buddha in the first place he pointed out that it was wrong, and then in a question and answer session or a discussion, with the help of that discussion, he wanted to clarify all the doubts and add some more knowledge to the other monks, those who have participated in that particular congregation. And they are the Buddha mentioned, as the Venerable Sati maintained, there is no eternal consciousness as such, and consciousness arises in and there according to its own nutriments, and one thing is the consciousness is arising then and there. Second thing is it arises according to its own due nutriment. The consciousness reckoned according to the nutriments, and when and where these nutriments ceases to exist, that particular consciousness ceases to exist. After developing this argument, the Buddha generalized it for all the five aggregates, namely the materiality, the aggregates of materiality, and the aggregates of the feelings, perception, volitional activities, and the consciousness. That was the root cause for this discussion. So, yesterday we tried to understand not only the consciousness, even the even all the aggregates have the same common nature. They are not eternal, and they, in a sense, they can't say, we can't say it is nihilistic or ending by itself. That's a kind of a dependent origination and arising by its due nutriments. Whenever the nutriments are cease to exist, going to end, that particular aggregate also going to end, going ceases to exist. So after bringing that argument up, the Buddha is asking, if there is, if someone is not understanding or then and they are observing the very arising of the materiality, the very arising of the feelings, the very arising of the perception, and the very arising of the volitional activities or mental fabrications, storytelling, and the consciousness, is there any chance for that particular person to entertain doubts? Then the monk says, yes, if someone is not sharp enough to understand then and there, materiality arises, if he or she is not diligent enough, vigilant enough, he or she may fail to see the very beginning of the process. So therefore, that failure is known as negligence. That means, if you are not sharp enough, if you are not right at the very beginning, vigilantly and diligently and mindfully, you may be delayed to see the process. You are bound to see already matured, hardened process, and therefore there is enough chance for you to entertain doubts. From where does it come? Is it due to my will or my intention, or is it due to outside omnipotent, omnipresent God, or it is fictitious without knowing the reason, or what was it, how it happens. So therefore, if someone is not right at the beginning, whenever the materiality arises, whenever the feeling arises, perception arises, volitional activity arises, and the consciousness arises, there is enough chances for that particular person to speculate or entertain doubts. So that fact also accepted by the monks. And then in the same line, the Buddha is asking, when and where someone is ready, someone is diligent and vigilant to see the very arising of the materiality, the very arising of the feelings, perception, volitional activity of the consciousness, does that particular person in a position to understand what is the proximate cause or the nutriment which helped this very arising of the aggregate. That is to say, if someone is taking time, if someone is sharp enough, vigilant enough to see the beginning of the materiality, that is to say, seeing external objects, hearing sounds, smelling, tasting and touching. When and where it happens, if someone is diligent and vigilant, can he or she see the proximate cause? It is not something omnipotent, omnipresent God. It is not irrelevant cause. It is not all of a sudden happened coming from the guru. There is a relevant cause. Relevant nutriment is there. Can someone see? Then they also the monks give affirmative answer. Yes, if you are vigilant, if you are diligent, by observing the very beginning of the process, you are bound to see the root cause, bound to see the nutriment, bound to see the proximate cause. And the third argument the Buddha says, and if someone is sharp enough, vigilant enough, diligent enough, mindful enough to see the beginning and to see the relevant cause, can he or she understand whenever the relevant cause is suspected, that very phenomena is going to see suspected, that the very materiality is going to see suspected, or your feeling, perception, or they are also the monks giving affirmative answer. So then the Buddha is asking, if someone to see, if you take the materiality as an example, the very arising of the materiality and the proximate cause for that materiality, and if someone is to see, whenever the proximate cause, the nutriment ceases to exist, that very materiality ceases to exist, under such circumstances, can he or she rectify, evaporate, and finish all his or her doubts? Then the monk says yes. So therefore, the quotation that I cited, it says, Bhutamitanti bhikkave yathāvata sammapanyāya passato yāvichakijjāsāpahiyanti evambhanti. The translation goes like this, because if doubt abandon in one who sees as this actually is, that means the doubt abandon if in one who sees as it actually is, which proper wisdom thus this has come to be? Yes. So this is the point I thought of elaborating today before going into the four nutriments, and it is the next stage, because this is very important in the meditation. In the meditator's progress, because up to this point, each and every person have a fair share of doubts. It is internally, doubts are there, therefore heavily up to this point, someone has to depend on the faith. Just mere belief that what the Buddha teaching is correct and that the teaching is consistent. And the followers, they are following just something to understand in this very life. Up to this eradication of the doubt, he or she is having a danger of doubt. So therefore, when and where someone is ready to rectify, ready to evaporate this doubt, he or she is going to develop kind of a faith. It is not just blind faith. It is not superficial faith. It is not unfounded faith. After developing this kind of credibility or assurance, he or she develop the faith. It's called Okappana Sadda, that is verifiable or testable kind of faith. So therefore, up to that point, the Buddhism is a Islam. But the teaching is a Buddhism. From this point onward, it becomes a more than an Islam, something you can verify yourself in this very life under your very nose. So therefore, it makes quite a difference, a real change in one's life to justify what I am doing. Am I just following a blind faith, or am I in a position to rectify the doubts so far I have entertained through this mindfulness and through seeing the very beginning of the materiality, seeing the approximate cause or nutriment for the materiality, seeing whenever the materiality, whenever the nutriment ceases to exist, approximate cause going to exist, the very materiality going to exist. Whenever this is being proved for the first time, then onward, the meditation is a science. Each and every time you get if the faculties are aligned, you can prove it to yourself. You can verify yourself that what you have so far tried has come up to certain maturity, not a complete enlightenment, not a complete attainment, but you get the art how to verify with yourself. Then onward, you are completely independent, I would say, from Buddha. You are independent from your Dhamma. You are independent from your Sangha. And independent of yourself. And things are happening in a multitude in our life. When and where they happen, you try to focus with your spiritual qualities. When and where the spiritual qualities come along, aligned with, you can see how the things are happening. So, to come up to that kind of rectification of the doubts, not to entertain doubts, the Buddha, in his instructions towards the meditation, he says, as I tried to mention yesterday, take what is most gross, what is most easy to tackle by an amateur or by a beginner, that is to say, start with the materiality. Of course, the whole theory, the whole ramification is not limited to materiality. It is diversifying to the feelings, the perception, and the volitional activities, and the consciousness. Of course, this particular sutta starts with the consciousness. But now I am trying to give a practical, pragmatic instructions, starting from materiality, how can we apply this experience you gain through the materiality to the feelings, to the perception, and to the volitional activities, and the consciousness. So therefore, you are first limiting or recognizing your most prominent, proximate, or obvious object frequently happening, whereby you can keep it with your face-to-face with your nodding mind, meditating mind, mindful mind, diligent mind. Or to cut the long story short, what I am referring is you recognize your either breathing as your primary object, or as we tried to understand yesterday, rising and falling of the abdomen as your primary object, or while you are in a walking, the touch of the ground with the right leg and the left leg as your primary object, or whatever it may be, which is verifiable or related to your body, and you can experience under your nose. So, supposing, or if you take the breath as your primary object, what you do is, first develop familiarity and the friendship with the breath. Let the breathing takes place. You try as much as possible to be with the breath, to be with the in-breath as the in-breath happens, to be with the out-breath when the out-breath happens. But if this is the theoretical maximum you can expect, at least what happens is, whenever you are trying to focus to this kind of a primary object, a lot of distractions happens. Wandering, thoughts, daydreaming, fantasizing, pain, sounds, many things can happen. So, each and everything, usually, the beginner, uninstructed yogi, are going to react with, get worked up with, get angry with, but that is not a good way. You have to understand, soon you start this meditation, all the others are not going to stop. All the others are not going to be tamed. So therefore, when and where the time permits, try to develop the familiarity with the breath. Develop the friendship with the breath. Let the breathing take place. As far as sounds are prominent, you be aware, now my mind is not with the breath, but with the sound. When and where the sound ceases to exist, you know, it may come back either to the breath or may go to the sound, pain or thinking, whatever may be. But when and where the time comes, you maximize the time with the in-breath and out-breath. It's a end of a fight. It is not an easy task. But whenever you keep on practicing, just like archery or target shooting, the person who do not know how to tackle a gun, or a bow, very difficult to shoot, even to the plate, even to the target. And after long practicing only, you will develop the aim, the calibration, and the focusing to the target bow. And then only you have to keep on practicing to shoot to the bullseye. And very difficult to predict that again and again I may shoot to the bullseye, no one can predict. But only by practicing only you develop the coincidence that leads to hit the target or at last to the bullseye. Exactly the same way, just mere common sense, don't expect any miracle, don't expect any formula. It is just the common sense. Keep on practicing. So therefore at the beginning it is so discouraging. Therefore it says it is painfully slow. That's why it's become very spiritual. It is profound. Knowing that you keep on practicing. Supposing that someone is developing kind of a relationship with the in-breath and out-breath for a consecutive thought moments, we'll say 10 cycles of the in-breath and out-breath. 10 seconds or 10 minutes or whatever may be, then only you come to know, you can predict. Now I can keep my mind with the breath face to face, and next in breath also definitely I can see without much of a trouble. Next out breath also I can see without much of a trouble, like the predictability coming to be. That is in meditation jargon we say, now you can keep the object face to face. Up to that point, your past mistakes and your trial and error will teach you what are the best ways and means to keep the breath face to face. So generally it says two techniques. Before walking, sitting, meditation, you better have a walking session, then the mind is somewhat mobilized, trained. For this kind of training. So therefore one thing is, general instruction is to have a walking session before sitting. Second thing is, once you sit and start meditation, start noting or mental labeling when the in-breath happens as in-breath and the out-breath has happened out-breath. So when you keep on practicing, one day you will come up to this state where predictably the in-breath going to happen next, then you are verily can be with the in-breath. When the next breath going to happen next, you can be. Whenever such a predictability face-to-face with the primary of it happens, then the Buddha says, you only see the gross middle of the in-breath. So therefore now you know each and every in-breath you can find. Why don't you try to see the beginning of the in-breath? Where does it come from? How this in-breath come into your perception? Before you come into the perception, from where it comes from? I said that when you are observing the sun, and you know when it is from the sky, but if you wish to see, you have to go to the eastern seashore and see the dawn and see how the sun is arising. For that you have to go beforehand to the seashore and be prepared to see the dawn and then the sunrise. Exactly the way untrained mind, uninstructed mind, unprepared mind only see already arisen gross breath that we call delayed observation or negligent. Now the meaning, word meaning of the sati or apamada is diligence. You must try to see how this breathing starts. So therefore not only you be aware of the in-breath as it happens, in the face-to-face, you try to see how in-breath comes into your perception. And whenever the out-breath happens, out-breath going to happen, you have a certain amount of diligence and vigilance to see how the out-breath is going to happen. So therefore, slowly, you try to understand very subtle in-breath and very subtle out-breath. And if you have any early experiences, this point here, you find very easy to understand what I am telling, and it finds very enthusiastic as a hobby. When and where the in-breath happens, you try to see the beginning. When and where the out-breath happens, you try to see the beginning. More and more you keep this understanding the early part of the in-breath down, with your mindfulness is sharpening in a very efficient way. And your concentration, that means the one-pointedness also now completely within the sphere of in-breath and out-breath, but it is searching and seeking and penetrating and go into the deep of the very subject, that is to say the beginning of the in-breath and the beginning of the out-breath. Without knowing that, even if you claim that you see the in-breath and out-breath, that still there are chances for the doubts to be entertained. The best example I can cite is, if there is an epidemic disease in the social level, according to the present allopathic medical system, many people will come and report to the hospital. So, then and there what the doctors are doing is to give medicine to alleviate the symptoms. But medical research people take the example and take the tissues and try to trace the root cause of the disease. So there you have to understand, when the person becomes sick, person loses its immunity, lot of secondary and tertiary infection can come and very difficult to isolate the very root cause. So therefore you have to get early symptoms. Then only you are the tissues of the early symptoms only give a better chances for the research people to trace and identify, limit the root cause. So therefore government will make an announcement. Don't wait till the disease become aggravated. Please come and report to the hospital. These are the early symptoms. When it is happened, now it is epidemic, please come to the counter and be treated. So more and more the early symptoms are, early patients are, say patient with early symptoms are going to come, the tissues will be, the phlegm, the urine, fecus, or whatever may be taken, and testing. More and more you go to the early part, you find curing and the healing is easier. Because no much secondary complication, no much tertiary complication. So therefore, while the symptoms are being treated at the hospital level, research people has to go back to the root cause. I did my agriculture, and there we have to be aware of the plants and it is pathogen. When we are to search and if we trace back the particular root cause, or bacteria, or virus, or fungus, we have to reconfirm it by the Cox postulation. With the disease, the same thing creating the problem, so you have to infest with that root cause with the healthy people, we now get healthy plants and see same symptoms arising. And that is how the research people are tracing back to the source. And once you recognize and isolated the root cause, easily you can find the antibiotics, or easily you can find the medicine. But without understanding and without tracing back to the source, whatever you can do is, we can simply say, symptom management. That is what the pharmaceutical people are doing now. They try to keep the symptoms as long as possible and managing it so that they can earn good money. But that is not the medical science. Medical science is to go back to the root cause, exactly the way the Ayurvedic medicine, that is what we basically found in India, and the Buddha came out with exactly the same. When the Buddha presents the Four Noble Truths, he says suffering, the root cause for suffering, and the emancipation, the root cause for emancipation. These are the Four Noble Truths. Exactly we have in the Ayurvedic, whenever the disease happens, you have to recognize the disease and the cause for disease and the medical cure and the cause for the cure. So this is how you are not tackling a disease now. You are tackling breath. But I cited the example in order to make the point clear. So going back to the beginning of the in-breath, going back to the beginning of the out-breath is the way you are sharpening your mindfulness. You are penetrating into the object. You are giving a better chance for your mind to be more calm and collected upon the object or one-pointedness. When and where that happens, you see, unless otherwise you go prepared, you only can see gross, already prepared, manifested in breath because of your unpreparedness, because of your lack of mindfulness, because of your lack of sensitivity. So when and where this mindfulness is being applied diligently, without a delay, without a negligence, you learn kind of an art going back to the root cause. This is one of the basic things Buddha recognized as a technique. If you wish to have a permanent answer, don't much worry about the symptoms. Of course, symptoms also they must be managed. But meanwhile, you have to take time to see the root cause. When you go deep and deep, you see very subtle yama movement starts, and that very subtle yama movement is not enough to give a sensitivity or rub against your nostrils. So much so, breathing happens that you can't feel, that you can't perceive. But there is a part. It is happening behind the screen. And after then the drama starts. And more you go to the root cause, you find that there's no limit, no end towards the beginning of the inbreath. And once you come to know the beginning and the middle of any phenomenon, in this case we have taken the inbreath or outbreath, then Buddha knows, you know what does it mean by the breath. Otherwise, you may claim, but you may know only 30% or 50% only. Other parts is under the water or behind the screen. So this is how you establish the mindfulness, your steadfast mindfulness. and basically establish mindfulness. And once the mindfulness is steadfast, difference will come. But it has to do it in a very systematic way, gradual way, starting from the gross, go to the subtlety. For that you have to understand, very difficult to do it overnight. Very difficult to do by one single breath. It must be a repetitive thing, and the character you need is the preparedness, the diligence, the vigilance, and you must understand last breath I see, once it is matured up to 60%. So, next breath, or next in-breath, can I see at the 59%, 58%, 57%, and slowly, slowly when you go back to the early part of it, you see the huge area in your brain never tapped, never used. You are using only 2% of the brain. This is the regular circuit. It is working, and that is what you have been accustomed to. But now you are going against the grain. You are observing that very breath, not for the gain, not for the fame, not for any other worldly pleasure. It's for the sake of understanding, sake of make the mindfulness take fast. Take the concentration is steady. Take your primary object more penetrated. More go into deep detail. When you go there, you find, everyone may find, right from the beginning, you can't perceive, you can't develop mindfulness. But before, more than yesterday, today you can go. And tomorrow, still you can go. When you go there, definitely, it's an endowment. If you train your mind to see the early beginning of the in-breath, definitely this very mindfulness will lead you to see the end of the out-breath, end of the in-breath, how it ceases to exist, and beyond that, your perception, it exists. Its tail end is there. That is only deduced, that you can, inferentially you can understand that when you are observing the very end of the in-breath, your perception stops, feeling stops, but you feel there's a tail end and tapering off, and before the next out-breath start, you may hit a gap. And to see this gap, you must start with the grossness to the subtlety. And if you go to the subtlety, the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the in-breath, whatever the mindfulness you have, whatever the diligence you have, whatever the concentration you have, whatever the energy you exert, whatever the faith you have, you can't do away with the gap. Ultimately, you have to accept each and every time out-breath, in-breath going to cease, and then out-breath goes to start, that's it. And when you're the out-breath going to ceases, and in-breath going to start, that's a gap. And you will find, this is an agglomeration, there's no continuity. There's no continuity, but unless otherwise you have that much of a sharpness in the breath, you feel in-breath gives rise to the out-breath, out-breath gives rise to in-breath, and it appears like a thread. But more and more you go there, you find, you claim that you know the in-breath and out-breath, but that you claim it because your mindfulness is not up to the mark. Your very observation is not complete. And there's a gap in between. So that gap, for the person who go unprepared, it's a shocking, threatening, and developing kind of fearfulness, uncertainty, entertain doubts, and so much of black hole. But the Buddha, he starting from the gross to go to the subtlety, and whenever that the uncertain area, the black hole, the dark matter, I would say, just a bit words, and when they come, you must try to understand without that antimatter, matter cannot exist. antimatter cannot exist without the matter. So they are reciprocal. Whenever you see the in-breath and out-breath, that's a huge amount of gap incorporated, unless otherwise you look sharply, you won't see it. More and more you to see, you find that you can explore into this dark matter or dark area or the gap as much as you develop the mindfulness, as much as you develop the concentration, as much as you develop the preparedness, the vigilance, the diligence. So therefore you find the breath that represents the whole world. The whole world represented by the breath. This holographic connection is there. So more and more you refine the object, or so to say, the tail end of the bell-shaped curve, you don't know how much the mind is refining. Now you are refining the materiality. Materiality means the air movement, the stiffness, tension, expansion, contraction. This is what you feel. When more and more you go to the subtlety, the mind also parallelly, or your feelings, or your perception, or your volitional activities, and the consciousness also, there is a kind of a parallel development. So therefore, even though in the early part we take the materiality as the example, reciprocally, the mental part also incorporated. So when that happens, many uninstructed yogis undergo a lot of changes. As to say, more and more you have to see the very subtle end of out-breath and the very subtle beginning of the in-breath, or very subtle end of in-breath and the very subtle beginning of out-breath. So more and more you to see this subtle area, the breath by itself become very calm. Ultimately you feel the wave, the amplitude of the wave, slow down to the data plane. Kind of a breathing is happening, so much so you can't perceive the difference between the in-breath and out-breath. At the beginning, you had a lot of discrete characteristics, natural characteristics, the in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer, in-breath is longer, out-breath is shorter, or other ways around. Many, many characters, but when and where this subtlety happened, you see the individual characteristics of the in-breath and out-breath appear to be merging each other and ultimately end up with the flux. Everything appears like a flux, and that flux not only representing the in-breath and out-breath, you feel that your very being, your life continuum, or your experience, the present moment, is just become a flux. So it is very boring, very monotonous, very non-dramatic. So you feel fall asleep, nodding starts, disinterest starts, and the hate towards the meditation also starts, and the fearfulness arises, uncertainty arises, and many recognize this as one's own mistake that has to be rectified by listening. Our mind is very happy with parietal entertainment. It's very happy with dramatic games. That is why we go for the James Bond shows. And it must be action-packed. And it must be widescreen, with full of music and everything. So morning to evening we can see. But instead, if you are going to see a meditating monk in a film for 3 hours, no, you won't get the economy, you won't get the profit. So this is what, if you are changing the object one-to-one, if you are changing the posture moment-to-moment, if you are changing the seeing to the hearing, hearing to the thing, you are fully awake and you can be there. When and where you take one particular object, whatever it may be. If you go deep into that, what happens is, their individual characteristics become faded off and blurred, bewildered, and instead the natural characteristic happens, common characters happen, that common character is nothing but just the flux. The example yet another I can cite is, nowadays maybe much technology is developed. Early days, whenever the TV, if you have not a proper channel tune, you get a lot of dots happening throughout the screen. Whenever you tune into the proper channel, the dots make males, females, rivers, flowers, trees, and all the kind of things. Then onward the story starts. The story may be a tragedy or a comedy or whatever may be. But when and where the channel is not being focused, they reduce into dots. How many minutes you can look at the dots? Whenever the screen is going to be just dots, you feel so monotonous, you quickly change into tuned into a channel, and you wish to have males and females and all the kind of thing, but you have to understand each and every male and female appearing in the screen is nothing but made out of dots. It's just agglomeration. So what the Buddha do is, from your channel, he is just changing the knob to see the dots. Whenever it is channel is going to make a picture, will make a story, and you can see natural characteristic, it's a comedy or tragedy or whatever maybe. Whenever it comes back to the common character of the dots, you can't see it just a flux. Exactly the same thing happened. Whatever the object you are going to take, I took the in-breath and out-breath as the example. Even if you start with the rising and falling, and you wonder, in the walking meditation also, if the walking is happening in a very smooth way or un-effortful way, sometimes you can feel that in the walking meditation also. And once you develop that kind of a merging with the object effortlessly, in the walking meditation, easily you can see whenever you are engaged in your day-to-day activities, alone, doing wholeheartedly, that same flux, the same merging can happen. So whenever that happens, you come to know, this flux can give rise to individual objects, that individual objects can again reduce back to the energize back to the flux. If you do not know that, you think there is the intelligent design. As one person is involved, he is doing everything. And therefore he is very omnipotent, omnipresent. So instead you find this is kind of a universal law. Energy can collapse into matter, and matter can be energized into the waves. So this can happen at the very start, the outset of the in-breath, at the very end of in-breath. But the thing is, our mind is not sharp. Our mind is not mindful. It is not diligent. It is vigilant, not vigilant. It only see already arisen objects, already arisen in-breath, already arisen out-breath. Exactly the way you can see already arisen pleasurable feeling. You can see already arisen painful feeling. You can see already arisen perceptions. You can see already arisen volitional activities, already arisen consciousness. But the very consciousness won't program you to, or won't allow you to see its conception or the cessation. The Buddha is giving you the secret. If you wish to work out this sun, don't jump from the tip of the iceberg to tip of the iceberg. Select one berg, iceberg, and know that you are on the tip of the iceberg, and slowly come down to the water level and go submerge. And that is the point where the perception is going to take place, and don't limit your mindfulness to the only to the perceivable area. The mindfulness is such a character, it can go deep down into the subconscious, And so you have to have a preparedness. I would say a radical preparedness. Irrational kind of preparedness. When you go there, of course this transition is somewhat challenging because it is threatening your life continuum. It is threatening your likings and dislikings. It is threatening your personality. It is threatening your eternal view. It is threatening your the nihilistic view. It's going to show whether you like it or not, whether you know or not, as a universal principle. You can be only a neutral observer if you are a very good meditator. Otherwise, you'll be carried away by already arisen rising and falling, or in-breath and out-breath, or emotion, or feeling, or perception. And ultimately, you make your world out of that, but majority of the part is unexplained. So, huge area for you to entertain doubts. So, the Buddha never find fault with the entertaining of doubts. But he says that in doubts consume everything you earn. The world is full of wars, it's full of misunderstanding, full of miscommunication. Because we know only expressed, labeled, perceived knowledge. We are never ready to go unexpressed, unperceived, unknown area, we feel it like a mistake. That is the mistake of the science. For the last 200 years, we were behind the repeatable experience and verifiable experience through your senses or through your edits. But when and where you go to the beginning of the in-breath or end of the in-breath, you see your senses become invalid, benumbed. You take another kind of a direction, when and where you have to see the very beginning of the in-breath, very beginning of the out-breath, your connection and seeing and impingement from the visual objects become immaterial. You develop kind of a sixth sense. You experience, it is not, you can't categorize it as a seeing. It is not with the seeing with the carnal eye. You can't see, you can't categorize it as something hearing. You can't categorize this as smelling, or tasting, or touching. Because even the very touch of the in-breath, the inception of the in-breath, you challenge and you go behind the screen. Ultimately, you lose the connection to the body, the eye, ear, nose, tongue. But experience that you are going to have is a very solid one. And if you are going to communicate, others will say you are talking about mystics. They may complain telling you are in hallucination. You are in mind conditioning. Or you have conditioned your mind, that is why you see, why not other people are doing. But the Buddha says, if you follow the instructions with the faith, with the energy, with the concept of the mindfulness and the concentration of wisdom, each and every person can do it. But in order to go this against the grain trip, you have to forego sensuous pleasure. You have to doubt the knowledge you gain through the senses. You are not going to deny it, you are not going to hate it, you are doubting. And then only you can go into that. Therefore, any person who can see the very beginning of any phenomenon, he comes to know the whole worldly knowledge, external knowledge, the knowledge which can be perceived by the senses, are just the tip of the iceberg. And the tip of the iceberg is only 1/10 of the total volume. And now, with a new neuroscientist, scientific, as in the physics, they come to know through our wavelengths, the visual range explained less than 2% of the whole wavelengths. So therefore we can see only 2% of the world, 2% of the physical world. Others are there that our senses can't perceive it, but the science can't deny. That is why there is 2-4% matter, 26% dark matter, 70% dark energy. So at the best, the maximum, the best scientist, with the full time, he can see only the 4% of the world. Balance is a mistake. And the neurologist, out of the total capacity of the brain, we are using less than 2%. Both the others are brand new. This is for the politician, 100% brand new. They never use it. They never use it, they use only the secretary's knowledge. And the other part of the joke is, if you analyze the DNAs, if you take a bacteria and analyze the DNA, and if you apply the, take back the DNA of the Socrates or Isaac Newton or Einstein, no difference. Difference is less than 2% it says. So we call this world is human world. It's a joke. It's a world of the beings, living beings. We are so common that when you come to different languages, different creeds, different religion, so much of wars. And we think we are superior than other beings. Only the reason is all the other beings are dumbbound, they can't talk. Only you can protest. Only you can talk, the human. So we make so much of us telling this word is human word. But when you go deep into this the dark area, you go deep into this the subconscious area, you develop kind of a communication, not only with the human being, with the people talking in the same language. You can feel, according to the present new terminology, this is a signless communication. Our present technology, information technology, we call we are in the age of information technology, it's hard to miss, whatever maybe they are calling. It's only depend on science. As far as the science are used, huge room for doubt or miscommunication. That's why the different wars and everything happened, misunderstanding happened. But when and where you go to the signless communication, there only you can see the real Dhamma or real truth or real universal logos. So you have to understand that all the perceivable area, the science, gross area, is just the tip of the iceberg. You have to go back to the source. When you go back to the source, it's a kind of a picnic. It's a kind of a exploration. It's a kind of a deep in plunging down into the same subject. And when you more and more you to go there, you understand how much doubts can happen if you know only the crest of it. You know only the tip of the iceberg. So therefore, doubt is a must in this world. So more and more you go to the deep down, you find this each and every start of the phenomena has its own causative factors. When and where these causes are available, effect is a must. If the causes happen to be, you can't work with the effect. That is to say, when and where the visual objects are there, when and where the sensitivity of the eye is there, in between there is no gap between the seeing, very seeing, no one can stop. If the consciousness can't die. And where is the sound is there, and the sensitivity of your eardrum is there, if there is no blocking thing in between the sound and the eardrum, if the consciousness goes, ear, to become ear consciousness, you can't do away with listening. And each and everyone verify that. There's no God, there's no soul, there's no the Paramatta, that means the omniscient original source. And there's no jiva there, that you have no agenda. Everything happens according to its own priorities, its own prominency. Your best is, you can be a vipassana yogi, you can see it as it is. So this seeing is rectifying so much of doubts. And that very doubt, even though you define the mindfulness as here, now, I am, that very clearance of the doubt is not limited to here. It is applicable to the whole of the world. Not limited to the now. It is applicable to the past and the future. It is not limited to me. It is applicable to all the other living beings. So therefore, when you go to the root and clarify doubts, you can see each and everything has its own causative factors. When and where the causative factors come align with, the effect happens. When and where the causative factors disintegrate, the effect disappears. So therefore, all neuroses, all tension, all frustrations, all disappointments, is without the second person. Everything is within, and the day you see everything, you will never find fault with someone. You will never find fault with the yesterday or tomorrow. You will never find fault with other places or other people. So that is the way you become omnipotent. You become omnipresent. You know these things are happening, I am observing. And earlier, I used to find fault with other people, other places, and other times. But more and more you understand, you see the causes when they come alone, these are going to happen, no one can stop it. And whenever the causes disintegrate, the result is normal. That is to say, whenever the bees are going to get together, we call a hive. But the bees are spread all over, we don't call this as a hive. Still the bees are there, they are scattered, but the name disappears. Exactly the way when the matter, feelings, perception, volition practices and the consciousness happen, we call a being. And when you go back to each and everyone and understand, of course we can understand one thing directly, other thing in a deductive way, then you can understand this very being, so-called being, I am, is a agglomeration. It has its ethical value, but in the deep down, you yourself can analyze it in a very, if you know the art of thin slicing of time, and take in one tiny part of the materiality and go deep into that, and that zoom in and zoom out, you see whether it is zoom in or out, exactly the same flux. If you deep down into the atom and see, you see the nucleus and the rotating neutrons. Exactly the galaxy, if you go there, you see the middle and right round, both the others are rotating. It is called the fractional theory, or sometimes called chaos theory. Everything has the same pattern. But the thing is, we are changing object to object, therefore we have no thorough understanding on one thing. So therefore it is that invariable we have entered in those. So therefore, it is not a personal mistake. It is not something to brood into and say, oh, I am having so much of doubt and it is my mistake and I have so much of frustration and so much of tension. That you have to understand, as far as you see only a fraction, only a partial of the whole phenomena, there's a huge black spots. But by proper attention, proper mindfulness, slowly, slowly you can rectify, you can shed light into this dark part. And when the wind and where happens, you see kind of knowledge that is happening in against the grain, kind of a way. So therefore, proving it to someone else will be a hell of a problem. It's a communication problem. But if you wish, if you feel it is worthwhile, you can go deep into that and more you go there, your rectification of the doubt going to happen. And then onward, you can live in the present moment, in the full-fledged, 100% way, otherwise you are entertaining doubts and you are very living, very vitality is being undermined. Or you will just live in the past or future or other places or with other people. So bring that to the present moment and ultimately you find that verified present moment is fully contented. It's fully saturated. It's fully satisfied. And therefore, as far as you are missing the bus, you are missing the present moment, you find, you try to find the contentment in the outside materialistic world, outside sensuous world. Or you find, try to find the satisfaction, contentment, saturation outside. Then the Buddha says, only thing we can say, sorry. So therefore, while trying our habitual way of satisfaction and the contentment outside, why don't you take little time and go to the present moment, and more you go deep down there, you see the Buddha nature, you see the satisfaction, you see the contentment, and do it in a gradual way, day by day, or we can explain that gradation in terms of mindfulness. I am a person that often happy to explain the whole this thing with the mindfulness, but many may complain it is not the complete story, but my assurance is if you start this journey, definitely other qualities like concentration, the wisdom, the energy, the faith, everyone will be re-justified, and mindfulness will lead you therefore to start with this mindfulness. It has a magical power. So therefore, you have to isolate one thing and go deep into that, penetrate into that. Through that only you can see the arising of the phenomena, the proximate cause for the phenomena. Whenever the proximate cause is finished, the phenomena finishes to exist. So that is applicable not only to the consciousness, it applies to all the five aggregates, and ultimately it applies to everyone in the world, every matter in the world, living or unliving. So therefore, our exploration is not limited to here now I am, even though it is the starting point, ultimately diversify to the whole universe. So therefore, it is worth, religious wise it is justifiable, spiritual wise it is justifiable, wisdom wise it is justifiable. That is what we have to do. This call is a prime task of a person who is having a kind of a feeling towards the well-being of oneself. So that is what I thought of sharing with today as the today's Dhamma talk. Thank you very much for listening. So I have taken little more than 1 hour. So now we are going to take this opportunity to share merits with all the seen and unseen beings helpful in this organization, and sharing merit with all the dear and near ones, relatives, and to remind our objective and to straightening of our objective. With that idea in our mind, we are going to recite the Pali stanzas. Ittavata jagammehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ittavata jagammehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ittavata jagammehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe sattva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු ශාසනං ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මක්ඛරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතයෝ
ඉතං ඕධාතිනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතියෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමි පාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමි පාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමි පාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තිය සාදු සාදු සාදු